This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Phaedra Boynodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization with which we have been, are, or may be affiliated. This is episode 66, Hashtags.
Hello and welcome to yet another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin, half of the co-host team that's with you here today for today's show. And the other half of this all-male hosting team is, as you might guess, Michael.
Yes, this is Michael Rowe, half of the other half of the half that's here. Which makes us, is that 25%? I think I got that math correct. And we've got an exciting show this week. Unfortunately, our other two co-hosts, neither of them could make it this week. That happens. But we talked about something a couple of weeks ago, Michael, that you were excited to see coming on the horizon, and you picked it up. And I did too. So
I did.
Talk
Yay.
About it.
Woohoo! Yeah. We had pinged about this earlier because I thought it was just so funny. It was Hold Me Closely or Closer, Tiny Dancer or Tiny Death Star.
Tiny Death Star, yes.
Tiny Death Star has now been released by LucasArts, which is something that I wanted to see for a while. It's actually Tiny Tower with a Star Wars theme, and I've only played it just a little bit. But already I can see where it's going to have some real fun to it. So you can interact with the Emperor and Darth Vader, who is playing a little bit of a a comic relief sidekick to the Emperor,
yes.
Which doesn't exactly fit my mental picture of Darth, but okay. And you're helping to build the Death Star, so
yes.
Capture, you know, rebel scum spies who are walking around the Death Star, and you know you're giving authorization and passes to the assassin robots that you know happen to visit the Death Star, so they can come back and visit yet again. And so, like I said, I haven't gotten very far with it yet. I've just built a couple of floors and I've done a couple of the missions, but I think it's fun. I like the music. You know, it's very good, you know, LucasArts quality, 8-bit Muzak Star Wars related.
And we have Sandy.
Yeah.
Yes. We're in the show right now. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi, everybody. I have to move to where it's a little quieter.
We were just talking about Tiny Death Star.
Oh, well, I only saw the picture. So beyond that, I can't say that I'm up to speed on the Tiny Death Star. More up to speed on the Lego giant expensive star.
Well, Michael, you know, I did, as soon as you sent it out yesterday, as soon as it came out, I knew you were going to be, you know, 37 building levels tall ahead of me already. I quickly jumped in, and I do have an Imperial level where they're torturing the rebels for secrets.
Rebel scum.
but I can tell you already, I know you love Tiny Tower, and you know I got over it.
Well, I haven't played Tiny Tower in a long time.
It is the exact same game, except you go up levels and down levels, and I'll give it a week, but I don't think I'm going to go much beyond that. But I absolutely agree. The Star Wars theme is awesome. I love the 8-bit version of the Imperial March.
Yes.
which is cool. And, you know, I've gotten a couple of Ewoks. I've captured a couple of rebel spies already. I think I have 7 or 8 levels in the game.
Oh, could be.
Yeah.
And you know, I should share this too, that yesterday I did send a little tweet toward the Nimblebit people, which is how I recognized that the Tiny Death Star was actually out.
Yes.
To let them know about the supply chain game ideas that we were kicking around in episode 64.
And a big shout out to JetBlue, who responded to the tweet about last week's show.
Absolutely. So I was happy about that. And I also sent another little notice on to Southwest, says Sandy, maybe they were going to be inundated with tweets and mail and everything else, saying that, hey, we identified them, or you nominated Southwest as being the gamification leader on last week's show.
And they lost. So what's that
all about? It's a curse.
These guys. I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, my goodness sakes, that can't be possible. And JetBlue came in second. So.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. It's like the inverse Colbert bump.
Well, I decided that I'm going to help Southwest Airlines out. And the way I'm going to do it is the next time I'm on a Friday flight with you guys, I'm going to dial into the internet and be on the podcast while I'm on their plane. So
how about there we that? Go.
And then I'll say, look, see, I really am connected on an airplane, like literally. And no, we haven't taken off yet, but
I was about to say, do it on the tarmac. Don't do it up in the air, because then we'll hear.
Say it's that new co-host again. Oh my god! If you'd only get the technical settings right.
Well, you know, we're working through kinks. It's always great to add an additional co-host to the show and to kind of push this forward. But we always work through kinks, and that's. Okay.
So my next podcast is going to be gamesoflife.net.
Yes, yes.
It's a little bit like that Strangers with Candy skit.
Oh, God, I haven't seen them in forever.
With huge Nokia phone and saying, yes, hello, I'm on my cell phone. And it's like in a crowded theater or something. And the phone's about as big as he is. So there's one other Star Wars thing that I have to add to the mix here just before we go, and that is we now know that we can mark our calendars, set it for a critical meeting, you know, maybe at 12:01 a.m., I would guess, on December 18th, 2015.
Is that the movie 7, episode 7?
That's episode 7. Dum, dum, dum.
So, but by the way, so you said dun dun dun, and I don't know if either of you have watched the movie The Croods.
No.
Yes, I watched it on the way back from Ireland. Yes.
We loved it. We watched that the other weekend, and that was so funny. Dun, dun,
dun! You have to hear the 4-year-old version of it.
Well, sounds like I've missed something that I need to go fix.
Yes. My mind immediately became a 4-year-old, which is quite appropriate for those types of movies. And there was some good, you know, non-child humor in there. But great job by the guys and gals over at DreamWorks. I think it's the same team that did How to Train Your Dragon, which is still one of my all-time favorite movies of theirs.
Yes, it's ours too. And okay, since we're talking about movies, I did see the movie Gravity last week.
Yes.
It's extremely intense. So, and I guess my observations of the movie are, it does give you the perception that you're in space. It is one of those movies where 3D is better, which isn't always the case, as we talked about.
Yeah.
What's interesting, though, is a little hokey, like all the one thing to the next. I'm like, not likely to happen, but I'll go with it. And
then there's like 3 more things that each one's just a little bit worse in the, yeah, well, not likely.
And every one of them is recovered from, and you're like, you know, that's pretty miraculous. But at the end of the day, the best and most interesting thing I think in the whole movie is the fact that you really only have 2 actors in the entire movie, and the time flies by. I mean, when you go in and you sit down and the movie starts, you don't even realize an hour plus however many minutes, I think it's an hour and a half or so, has gone by when you walk out. You are totally washed out because you've just bounced all over space for that time. And you've done that with at most 2 actors and mostly 1 actress.
Awesome.
Wow. That to me was amazing because, you know, you think about the stages today and how much there's – so. That's part of it, is it just stripped out all the extra stuff and you're just in the moment with this one person, you know, out in space, which that was the sensation I think that they achieved that was pretty phenomenal. It made it really, really good. Not a good movie for kids, though. You know, that was sort of a downside to the whole thing of I really want to go home now. I really have 40 minutes, so that was not a good movie for kids, but I thought overall that's what was amazing about it. Truly, truly amazing. And I want all of you to know, Ender's Game is now on my list.
Okay.
It's good. I've heard reviews already, and
yes,
these, pretty good things.
Had to do the book review, so we've just finished the book for a second time to be prepared for the movie. So we'll give that update when we go.
Yeah.
And by the way,
yes.
Since we're moving from movie Gravity Space to Ender's Game Virtual Worlds,
yes,
let me give you two, since Phaedra's not on tonight, your game host question for Where's Villanova on the Cave?
Yes.
So this is an open-ended game question to be answered next week by all of you. What does CAVE actually stand for? You can certainly answer now if you know, if you think you know, because it's interesting what they think it stands for. And I'll give that answer next week to our game question. So for the two of you today, what does CAVE actually stand for? And you cannot Google that. You cannot look it up.
I think it's collaborative audio-visual virtual environment.
Okay.
I made that up, and I'm actually starting to type it in so we can have it for the show notes.
I was just going to use Bing.
No, you can't do that. You can't search it. You can't. Nope, you got to use your own, whatever's in your brain.
I'm going to take a frying pan and Bing you upside the head.
Collective audio-visual environment.
Okay. Well, we will see next week what the real answer is.
I
always thought it was computer-aided visual environment.
That would work.
They have something completely different, and I'm not going to tell anybody what the answer is until next week. Stick by the podcast for next week's answer to our game question on the Villanova Cave. So they are starting, by the way. They purchased the $1.3 million worth of required equipment, so these aren't going to be in our basements in our man caves anytime soon.
Why not?
But just so you know, we do have an Oculus VR headset, so we're going to try our own little mini cave, Michael Rowe.
Excellent. I can't wait. I'll be sitting here going, dude.
Maybe they'll have it connected by episode 7.
Yes. No, episode 7 of Star Wars.
Or episode 7 of Star Wars. That's
yes.
True. You know, I normally don't do this, but you know, I have to do the spoiler, you know, for Gravity. It's 9.8 meters per second squared. So, there you go.
I thought you were going to say it sucks. Gravity sucks.
No, vacuum cleaners do.
I'm thinking that a couple of times, I'm sure that there's quite a few astronauts that would agree with you about that one. There's an upside to your stomach for gravity.
Yes,
so
yes.
For those of you who don't travel well, and we'll just come right full circle back to airplanes, gravity makes the difference.
It's kind of important.
Been there, done that. So, all right. All right. Now that I've totally interrupted our train of thought in the podcast, I'm glad to be here. I was so excited this week to see the traffic and people actually responding to some of the things that were going, which means you're all listening to us, and I am just excited. So,
ditto, ditto.
What's next?
So we had another article, Michael, that you had found this morning on hashtags being used with Instagram, quote unquote, yeah, hashtags.
Well, so I was perusing my way through the Twitterverse this morning, and I came across someone who made the witty comment of, boy, you know, this gives a whole new meaning to the word hashtags. And it was a gamification, if you will, of Instagram, but it's not limited to that. Other social networks are doing the same kind of thing where people are selling illicit pharmaceuticals by posting pictures of them and saying, hey, call this number if you want to purchase some of them.
But some of them were all natural. They weren't necessarily just pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, that's true. Some of them were all natural. There were some mushrooms involved. Yeah, exactly. So I it struck me as kind of a little funny because it's social. certainly mobile, and it's gamifying an environment that's really meant for social sharing, and in fact, it is a lot of sharing going on. And the legal aspects of this are likewise very interesting too, because most of the environments, whether they're talking about the Facebooks or the Google Pluses or any of the other kinds of networks, are saying, look, we don't monitor what the users are saying. We just don't do that, where there's an environment, and if users notice that there are things that are incorrect, inappropriate, or illegal, tell us and we'll get rid of it forthwith.
Yeah, the key thing there has to do with, once you start monitoring and editing the environment, then you have taken legal responsibility to make sure the environment continues to be within certain ground rules. By saying they don't monitor it at all, it allows them to then allow whatever game may be played with their environment. So
yes. Yeah, but I think you guys, one of the things that we think about, I use this all the time in my master's and college level courses, is that people are losing sight of what's human decency. I mean, there's no way I can go along with Facebook, who's now allowing anybody, teenagers and everybody in there, to continue to have videos of real decapitations of human beings and say that's okay. So that, you know, the other dilemma we've got with this is a breakdown right now of the human decency fabric that we've got to figure out, I think, because think about it. No, first off, probably, I don't know how many people viewed it until the news hit it, maybe not as many, but the system is breaking down even for self-monitoring. So maybe what we need to do is gamify self-monitoring and reward people who are in the self-organization piece and monitor this to allow us to keep it decent on a human level.
It's almost like it's sort of up and down voting for those kinds of things, for what attracts then the attention and gets you where you're going. And I completely understand the point that you're on, and it makes it extremely difficult to be arguing for, oh yeah, those kind of videos should exist, and I wouldn't go there. But it is very tricky slope about what level of monitoring, censorship, and removal would we tolerate from what kind of networks before we would say, you know what, I'll go someplace that doesn't do that kind of thing.
Well, I'll go there, and I know this probably won't make me many friends, but with a degree in journalism and a big supporter of freedom of the press and freedom of speech. One of the things that we have to realize, and I do, Michael, you made a good point, up and down voting. And right now, Facebook only allows up voting. And what I saw there, a guy that I follow, he runs a fan group for a musician I really like. He's very good. He's very public. He gives lots of great information. And unfortunately, his mother passed away yesterday. And it was unexpected. She was going into the hospital for something and just didn't make it. Anyway, so there was a good outpouring of friends and commentary back to him, but there were a couple of people who pressed like, which I don't understand at all, right? So there should be almost like a downvote on that one. You don't want to upvote somebody passed away, right? However,
yeah, but it's, you know, that's interpreted as a sympathy, right? It's like,
I know, but
I'm with you.
But, it's like, if you said, oh my God, I crashed my car and I clicked like, I don't get that. However, from a freedom of the press perspective and a freedom of speech perspective and a global perspective, there are, unfortunately, different social norms in different countries. And different social norms include different views on capital punishment. And what the behavior of that might be and how it impacts society's reaction on certain crimes or certain other activities. Not that I condone beheading in any shape, form, or fashion. Not that I condone it actually showing up anywhere in my feed. I'd be very upset by that. It would be disturbing to me. But at the same time, there are, again, it's social norms and, Sandy, as you said, how do you gamify so that it doesn't show up for you, as an example? And it may be appropriate in some cultures. And so I'll go there. I'll try to put a defense out there for it.
Yeah, but Michael, in those very cultures that it some of these things may be appropriate. They've banned Facebook.
So well, I know. Yeah, so
let's go with that one, because the reality of it is it's the same. I think it's the same dilemma that we faced actually at IBM when we were dealing with the virtual worlds, right? And you remember my leadership was to say, look, let's create, let's not dictate, let's create guidelines. Let's create a common set of guidelines, and then let's help to monitor those guidelines to keep people in the human decency category. And, you know, that was very effective. We didn't make a law. We didn't make a rule. It was very much self-oriented, but people were rewarded because they knew, you know, they would lose something if we didn't all follow the guidelines. And so, I think that's the other piece of this, is there's a lack of case precedence and there's a lack of leadership and vision. As I've always said, we're short on statesmen and ambassadors in the world right now.
Yep, absolutely.
And so what I think we need is to create a better conscience of digital ambassadors and digital statesmen. And again, a great way to, you know, gamify the self-monitoring, self-organizing aspects of this, because I participated in the work done several years ago when we went back to the U.S. Congress and said, look, you know, this is not okay what you're doing. You're not going to be able to legislate this for us and make it good. And it was effective, right, with the SOPA and the PIPA and all that. The IPAs, as I call them. So
yep.
Very good. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, I do think it's time for digital citizenship, digital statesmen and ambassadors who, and by the way, I think Anonymous to some degree is doing some of this for us. But the problem is we need a little more than that, because, you know, to operate covertly, we do that in the world, but we also need more overt operations.
Well, Sandy, I agree. And the thing is active engagement to do things, right? So that's why freedom of speech and freedom of the press are so important. Now, unfortunately,
responsibility, Michael.
Unfortunately, the examples of the people that are doing things that you and I may not like are coming from, as you pointed out, cultures that don't have those. So how do you, and this is the hard part. This is the hard part for gaming this, is how do you game that? How do you address that with a global tool that has regional differences and implications that one society may provide better freedoms and protections and another society doesn't? And then how do you mesh those together into that global environment? Because let's face it, things like Facebook and Twitter, et cetera, they are global. They're not country specific.
Well, that's not true, because look, Facebook's banned in China, right? WeChat is the big thing in China. So,
right.
You know, again, you got to look at, but I would agree. And my last thought is, you know, there is this digital citizenship process.
Yep.
And I do think we have to begin to teach people. And by the way, I'm all about freedom, but I got to tell you what I think is missing is responsibility. So we need to be digitally responsible, just like we need to have digital freedom. And that's going forward what I think a lot of the big companies need to start doing. I don't think Facebook's been digitally responsible. I think they're digitally wishy-washy. So
or irresponsible at times, too.
Yeah, well, that's why I say wishy-washy, because it's driven by the underlying platforms of – so again, I'm gonna tout Rushkoff's book, Present Shock. You guys, if you haven't read it, need to. He's right. All this stuff is built on old platforms, which is more monetary and monetizing in nature. And that doesn't always take into consideration just the fundamental pieces. And by the way, I think social scientists would tell us it's rewards punishment. So I'll give you that link in a little bit. Douglas Rushkoff is the author. Present Shock is the book. I love it. I would tell everyone they need to read it. And I will finish my soapbox for today's game.
Soapboxes are good.
We're not done yet. I want to join in on this a little bit here too. So you're kind of drawing me back to some of my philosophy courses from way back when, and the what dredged out of my memory was practicing virtue makes you virtuous. So it almost seems like we have to define what virtue, good global citizenship, good digital citizenship needs to be, that transcends culture. And create a reward structure around it that encourages us to, you know, be nice to one another and not evil.
Yes, don't be evil. So I, Sandy, I don't disagree. I think all those freedoms do require responsibility too. And again, what I might consider responsible in certain conditions may be considered irresponsible by others. So, so again, that's something that, to your point, Michael, is defining that virtuous state as the end goal that you can then strive towards, build within a virtuous system that explains how we all get to a certain place to
there you go.
Right.
So Michael Rowe, that's the beautiful thing about it, is to move back towards a systemic view of all this, because see, transactionally, we might all disagree here or there, but when it leads to a breakdown in the overall system, that's when we know we have a major problem. And the other thing, and I think this would be a great discussion about how to create the game. And by the way, there's that new virtual world out. I saw the link this week that was sent out. That's not, you know, it's more about this values and gossip, and you know, it's a whole different take on the creating your virtual world and playing the game in the world space. Clash of Clans, you know, look at all these games now that, you know, have a multi-level activity, and part of that is around your value system as well as your achievements and your team building, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's great, and I think it'd be a great podcast to talk about how to gamify this whole space called being a digital citizen, because it's also interesting that you can be a digital citizen and not be a global citizen.
Absolutely. So, and I think getting some feedback on this show from our listeners, either via email or Twitter or Facebook or Google Plus on this topic, would be a great feed into that discussion. And I just wanted to, you know, mention a book I read a while back called Accelerando, which kind of takes all these transactional things out a couple of hundred years in the future, and you start seeing things that are happening now and 10, 20 years ago, and how each transactional decision ultimately causes a breakdown in the overall system.
Right.
So, excellent point.
Good conversation today, and now I'm looking forward to talking, hearing from Southwest Airlines why they didn't lead in this space with the devices. I'm still irritated that I lost, to be honest.
Well, remember the conversation last week wasn't who's going to be the first ones out there to allow devices on there. It was the first on gamification.
Gaming the environment.
We're talking about gaming the environment and taking use of it, making use of it. So Southwest, you still have a chance. Delta, Michael, yeah, you were talking about them.
I was talking about Dubai Airlines.
Oh, that's right. Dubai, yes, that's true. So
JetBlue may beat us all out, but you know, right now I think they're only doing the marketing piece of this. And you know, because Southwest is always creative about boarding and all that stuff, I just got to believe that they're going to figure something out cool. All right, well, I've got my bet on them still, so we'll see how it goes.
Come on, guys, you can do it.
You can all do it. What?
I want to feel the love, and I also would like to have a little game around that space.
Yeah, nobody has to lose. They all can win.
Exactly. Right.
And here's your trophy for showing up.
When they figure it out, we will all win, and I'd really like them to just gamify the whole baggage process myself. If I was doing it, that's what I would do. So,
yeah, beyond what it is today, which is get your elbows out, get on board before anyone else. So, yeah, so I know we're out of time, Michael.
Yes.
Sandy.
Michael.
This was shorter than we wanted to because we had such good fun, but we will be back.
Next week.
Again next
week. See y'all. Bye.
See ya. Bye.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.